career of Galera Card, Douglas Faltaroy, famed in history, famed in song, and famed in story as the greats of hurling. And crowds have come from far and wide to see this game. Everything's set, everything ready for the start of this great game. And the game is on.
Ballyheal are back in the All-Ireland hurling final after inflicting revenge on Ballygunner as the world watched Lionel Messi lift the World Cup trophy. And it's an Antrim side that will meet them in the final, with Dunloy shocking St. Thomas in the other fixture in a half-empty Croke Park. Welcome along to GAA Weekly here in the 42. I'm Endicall, and joining me to discuss all of that is former Cork goalkeeper Anthony Nash. Anthony, how are you?
I'm good. Middle of December, top of hurling. It seems to be my thing this year. Great, the week of Christmas that we're going to be talking about two good games.
Yeah, listen, I think it speaks volumes when there a picture emerges on social media of all of the GAA journalists inside the GAA press box, not writing up their articles on what actually happened. They were in watching Lionel Messi and the World Cup final as it went to penalties. It was a weird weekend for what should have been a really big fixture of hurling championship.
Yeah, it's actually like, it was funny. It was, I put up a thing on Instagram yesterday where I had the laptop on for the soccer, and behind it on the big screen was the hurling. So I got my priorities right, just in case people were wondering. But it was a pity, like, because you'd love to have had a full day of it where you were sitting down to watch one and then, you know, in the other, rather than having two thrown on at the same time. But do you know what? It was great. Like, I'm a United fan. I was always a Ronaldo fan, but see Messi lift the World Cup was lovely as well on a Sunday. But it's a tiny shame that the two events had to go on at the same time. Now I know a lot of people were throwing up jokes on Twitter about the two goats playing at the same time between TJ Reid and Lionel Messi. Like, so we'll blame FIFA for getting the timing wrong this time.
Well, one of those goats scored his penalty, the other one did not, and we'll touch on that later on in the podcast. But just while we're on the subject of the World Cup and Croke Park and when these games took place, I dare say the Ballyheal players or the Dunloy players will not give one tosh about missing the World Cup final, given they're now in an All-Ireland hurling final of their own. But in terms of like a spectator event, did these games need to happen in Croke Park? Because I know as somebody who plays Club GAA, like I can't even imagine what it would be like to play a semi-final in Croke Park, and it would be a huge occasion. But a lot of these players who are playing at this level are senior intercounty hurlers who have played at Croke Park before. So in terms of the occasion, how do you balance that between what the players, giving the players an opportunity to play in Croke Park, and then giving spectators an opportunity to actually see these games?
So my little pet thing there, again, on top of the December hurling, has been always the quality of the pitches. I don't mind where they're played once the pitch is leading to good quality. The thing for me, as a player, once the game was starting, it didn't matter where you were or what you were doing. Obviously, like when you're playing into County and the place was absolutely jam-packed. And yes, of course, in a smaller stadium, the atmosphere leads to something for the spectator. But the players wouldn't have minded once the game started. Being paid to play in Croke Park is obviously, you'll never turn that down as a player as well. But I get your point. But like for me, I would have never have given up the atmosphere for the quality of the pitch, you know, as a spectacle. Because like, you know, in December, how many more pitches would have been as kept maintained as well as that? So that for me, and I know people are thinking that I'm harping on and boring about it, but like it's huge. Like rather than having it in a heavy pitch where the ball is dying on the field, that ball is still bouncing around. You know, and it takes credit to the groundspeople up there then as well. So for me, I was kind of, you know, I know you're robbing Peter as in the atmosphere to pay Paul as in the facilities and the ground and everything like that. But unless you had a kind of a middle ground where you had a smaller stadium with a fantastic surface, you know, but it was, look, I know it was small. It was muted. It was, yeah. You know, it really was like, and you could kind of see it like when they spanned across to the stadium, like, you know, it was such a small crowd, like, but again, I was kind of more leaning towards, look, the pitch is, if not the best in Ireland, one of the best. And you're talking about December hurling, like.
Yeah, and you've spoken about that a couple of times on this podcast about the quality of the pitch. As somebody who's not as attuned to hurling as it would be football, explain to me the difference in what a good pitch and a bad pitch does for a hurling game, because to the untrained eye, the Schlitter is off the ground a lot more than it would be in football. So what impact does that have on on the game?
So, like, first of all, you'd always hear, like, this is my goalkeeping thing. No, you'd hear, like, you drive in the gate, geez, the pitch looks incredible. And my first thing is I'm looking at the goal square. You know what I mean? So, like, you go into a club pitch, like, and, you know, the one nearest the dressing room has been absolutely reddened by young fellas and girls that are playing on the pitches, you know, to go for the puck around. And next thing, there's this hole. And as a kind of a vertically, as a vertically challenged goalkeeper myself, being only about 5 foot, whatever, the hole didn't help me reach the crossbar, like, you know. So I used to always get a good laugh with the fellas talking about how good the pitch was when the goal square was like a road. It was so bad and so, you know, either sanded or just gravel or ground or whatever. But it's the delivery, it's the feet. It's rather than having your feet heavy in the ground, it's the ball bouncing in front of a forward, being able to come up with a first touch, know the touch is going to be true by the ball skimming off. But it's like, you know, if you can go to an AstroTurf pitch this time of year, you know, when the ball hits it, it's going to come straight through. Well, if you're on a grass pitch, belong to any club team or some county pitches, it's not going, it's going to die. The ball is going to die. Like, it leads a lot more rucks, you know, because the ball is dead and people get in around it and it's not as easy to pick up. And it just, it adds to the speed of the game, you know, by just, and I agree, I know what you're saying about the ball being in the air, but even footwork wise, you know, and even having the pitch wide open, defenders or full forwards can stay in deeper because they know the ball will travel off the ground a lot faster. So just needs some more of an open game. But yeah, but it is something that maybe you have to look at for the challenge that the club season will have going forward, that, like, is it worth that muted atmosphere that Croke Park will bring for the quality of the pitch? Like, because it was, look, I'm sure the players would love the tighter, kind of higher atmosphere. But again, I'd like to ask the question, would they have swapped it for a less calibre of a field?
Yeah, I'd imagine it has a bit of an impact on your thighs and the, you know, sort of, you know, crawl, what, running through a turgid pitch with long grass at this time of year is not very fun either.
Both codes can actually talk across football, and hurling would be the same if you asked it. Like, the speed of the game has to be up in Croke Park, and it would be in a club field for Gaelic football or hurling, like, you know, any pitch, like, it's any sport, like, you know, you're able to run freer, ball is hopping off the surface a lot more. So I just think that's the thing. Yeah.
So let's talk about the action then. Ballyhale Shamrocks are in the All-Ireland hurling final once again, getting the better of Ballygunner, who beat them in the final last year, 116 to 16 points here. And I do want to talk about the penalty, because that was an amazing save from Stephen O'Keefe, an amazing performance from him as well throughout the game. But let's talk about the second half in particular. Let's start there, because Ballygunner only scored 3 points in the second half altogether. So tell me, how did Ballyhale stop them?
But sure, like, a couple of weeks back, we were talking about Napier Shigoni scoring was a 4 points in the second half against Ballygunner. So it was like, it's just the way the games go. Like, I thought for the whole game, I spoke last week, I think, about more of a system versus a style. So Ballygunner are systematic. Like, they, you know, they hurl the ball short, or they keep it close, or they move it through the lines. And the one thing you know against the Kilkenny team of any type, they're going to hunt you down and hit you. And it was like physicality from Ballyhale, who, like, you know, if you look at it sometimes, like, and Richie Reid is on the ball, sometimes he just hoofs the ball long and you're giving out, like, because the better ball was on. But next thing, all of a sudden, the forwards hunt in packs and they just started to turn over Ballygunner a bit more. But, you know, how did they do it? Like, it's always a kind of a question, like, what was there, a change at halftime? Kilkenny team seems to just up it in the second half, like, their intensity, their honesty. And it's raw honesty, I thought, was really the thing yesterday. And every time Ballygunner player was around the ball, a Ballyhale player or two, we're just chasing them down, getting body in, you know, getting a hook, getting a touch in, just disrupting the Ballygunner hurlers, like, you know, that like to have that little bit of freedom. And you know, like someone said, I think Desi Hutchinson got 4 points. I think I might be wrong there. And he was quieter than ever. Like, that's a brave statement to say, like, you know, but, like, they seemed to have to pull him out the field because Joey Holden was just doing so well inside the edge of the square. So for me, it was just, I thought the Ballyhale players were typical. And I mean, this is a compliment, Kilkenny-esque. They were just dogged, hard, you know, strong, you know, really honest in every part of the game, and having obviously the sprinkling of talent that they have in as well. And you know what? Like, we can talk about this, like, what a club team. What a club team. Like, you know, they may not be as strong as they were when Henry Shefflin was there and, you know, and all that, but, like, Jesus Christ, they just showed, like, that they still have it in them. And it was just, you know, they were not going to let that game go, like, you know, at any stage. And even the comment, I think I heard, I read there once, that the manager roared into the sideline, remember February. That just seemed to be their driving force yesterday. And I just thought it was just the willingness and the wantness, not that it wasn't there in Ballygunner, was the difference.
Yeah, I think if you go and go down and visit Ballyhale, it's one of the biggest culture shocks you'll ever see in your life, because the size of the club, the quality of the players they produce, and then it's basically just a patch of grass in the midst of Kilkenny. It's so, so small. The community is so, so tiny, and they don't have what you would call like a massive picking of players, but somehow they keep producing all these amazing hurlers.
We had that in Newtown here as well, like, you know, Newtown Shandrum here in Cork, like with the O'Connors, like, you know, so I was growing up playing my hurling with Cantorque, which was literally 20 minutes over the road. And then you had this juggernaut appear, like, you know, of a village that had like a shop and a pub, you know what I mean? Like, in Bernie O'Connor Hurley's, like, and a pitch. And all of a sudden they're winning All Ireland's, like, you know, it's amazing how these places can, you know, form such an unbelievable. And there are things that go, like it should never be underestimated what the likes of Newtown and Ballyhale do, like, you know, with the size of their places. Like, we'll talk about, like, Napiershig and Limerick and Ballygunner obviously have population and numbers, and a lot of the towns in Cork would have higher populations. But for the likes of Newtown down here to do what they did, and the likes of Ballyhale to do what they're doing is just incredible. Like, you know, it's a fantastic achievement. And I think when this team, for their own sake, they'll hope it won't happen for a while, but when this team does halt, we'll sit down and talk about even more brilliance. It'll be like the retirement of a player, you know, or someone passes away, you always kind of, you know, think back, like, when this team does halt to succeed for a while, it'll be spoken about as one of the greatest achievements, you know, because it's just, it's incredible what they're doing. And to beat a team that I would have had huge, like, I spoke for first-hand experience of the Pearcy this year in Limerick, was blown away by how good they were. They get turned over by Ballygunner, which shows again how good they were, then to be turned over again by Ballyhale. Now, I know it was a tight game, and when these teams meet 10 times, it'll change, I know, but it was, look, it's incredible. Like, it's just, they're a fantastic group of players.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if you speak to anyone from Ballyhale, I think what they're trying to do now is make sure that it isn't just a golden generation of players that are coming through, that they do cement themselves. Because I think they're only 50 years young now. This year is their 50th season, so they're still quite a young club in Ireland. So I think building a tradition of being a hurling stronghold is something that Ballyhale are going to look to do over the next number of years. But it would be remiss of me to be sitting here with a former intercounty goalkeeper and not talk about Stephen O'Keefe's performance, because it was a performance for all ages, really.
Yeah, look, I hated playing against him, because he's the kind of goalkeeper that even when a fella got a shot off from 10 yards off, you're still watching it to see does it beat him. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you come up against a lot of goalkeepers who have different attributes. For me, Stephen was one of the best shot stoppers we came up against. Now, he has all-round game, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, he's an outstanding goalkeeper, intercounty and club. But the saves he pulls off are just, like, you think it's in, and next thing all of a sudden you see his hurley go up in the air, and you're like, you absolute arsehole, will you just leave? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just leave it be. And then obviously, like, we met him, I think my last penalty was against him as well, like, and when I was looking up, he was there with his arse facing me and a big tie saving the ball, like, so he's brave out. But his saves yesterday, the penalty save, like, do you know the funny thing was, right, the angle doesn't do it justice. I'd love to see a replay, because TJ Reid was pointing, and when he was pointing, I thought he was saying it went in off the back stanchion or something. You know, if you look back, if anyone can get a look back at the clip of it, I'd know, can we show it? But, like, he points in, and it's like as if TJ Reid was saying, that's off the back stanchion. And I wanted to see a replay to see, was it? You know, because you can't really, the angle doesn't do it justice. His other saves were, his other saves were just brave. But he's very good at, if you watch him, he'll take a step to where he thinks the ball is going. So as the hurley is about to be struck, he's stepping towards it. And I think in the semi-final, I think a goal went in against him, or was against Pearcy on the other way. But 9 times out of 10, he's pulling off this save that you just, like, you don't expect him to make, you know. But he's, like, as I said, he was just himself and Owen Murphy were the two, like, that you'd always, you'd go, like, you're that forward, better put that ball in the bottom corner, or it's going to be a save. Like, you know, they're just two goalkeepers that just defies gravity, pulled off saves that I've, you know, that you'd be kind of just going in awe of. Like, so his performance was incredible. But to flip that over, then, I was lucky enough to work with Dean Mason with UL last year. And he's a character, typical Kilkenny character now, like, you know. But he pulled off a hugely important save from Desi Hutchinson, you know. And the thing about Stephen saves and Dean saves, so they actually hold the hurleys the opposite way. So Stephen holds it. The save to the right as a goalkeeper is incredible. And if you watch TJ Reid's second penalty, where it goes in, it was actually very close to Stephen, but it's a horrible save because you have to turn the hurley down and low. Okay. So TJ Reid, like, obviously put it in a great spot. But Dean turned his hurley over to save his one. And I actually thought it was a match-winning moment. And, you know, there was a lot made of his of the goal, Harry Ruddle goal last year, that Dara Corcoran, who also was with UL last year, who had a great game yesterday, I was delighted, and Dean were involved in. So I was delighted that if there was any ghost, which I thought was unfair on him last year, he was definitely put to bed, because he pulled off, for me, what mightn't be remembered, but his save was so for the two goalkeepers, and you talk about Martinelli and his, or your man Martinez, who's the Argentinian goalie.
Emmy Martinez,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, the day of goalies. Like, but Stephen O'Keefe's all-round shot-stopping display was one of the best, and but Dean's save was very, very important at a very critical time when Ballygunner were just about to come back into it.
Can I talk to you about the technical aspect of saving a penalty as a goalkeeper in hurling? Because a couple of years ago, there was a study done in baseball of pitchers and the batters. And the pitchers can throw the ball between 100 kilometers and 120 kilometers. That's generally the average. It's similar enough with how quickly the ball travels when it's hit, when the slitter is hit with the hurley. And the study found that they were trying to figure out how the batters actually hit the ball, because the human eye can't travel or process the information quick enough to tell the body to react to something from that distance, similar enough to hurling. And it turns out that the batters were swinging the bat before the ball had actually left the pitcher's hand, and that's the only way that they can hit it. Is it the same in hurley? Like, how do you save a ball that's traveling that quickly from that close of a distance?
So in a side story, we had the Fela team from Philadelphia over, geez, a long time ago now, I'd say about maybe 7 or 8 years, but they had a pitcher over who was only going into high school. So this young fella was being given a kind of a scholarship into high school, and he could throw a slitter, which obviously wouldn't travel as far as a baseball, but he could throw a slitter from outside the opposite 65 and go halfway up the net on the opposite side. Like, it was incredible. So they thought it would be a fantastic idea, get Anthony Nash to try and hit one of these shots. So I wound up, and I remember I had a goalie hurley, you know, not a tiny baseball bat. Mm-hmm. So I went to wind up anyway, you know, like that. And before I knew it, I had to pull off one of the best saves of my life, or my nose was going to be through my face. There was no way I was hitting it. I was diving out of the way just to get the speed the slitter came at me, and he curved it as well with the grooves of the slitter. And I literally, sure, I was the laughing stock of Cantor J pitch, because they were like, oh, you can't hit a young fella's thing. The ball travelled at me, and all I was doing was trying to strike, so I had no helmet on. And I went like that, and only for, I'd say my nose would be pointing sideways during this podcast still. It was just incredible the speed that it came at, like, but he could throw a slitter. I'd say he could have made it from the 45, the opposite 45. So the speed was just incredible. But, like, I remember trying to hit that. So my respect for baseball batters is ridiculous, and cricket players, like, the speed that they come at. It depends on the striker on penalties, right? So if you know a guy is a TJ Reid, let's say, like Stephen O'Keefe stood yesterday for the second one, and, you know, it didn't go. So you have a choice as a goalkeeper. Do you guess and hope you go the right way? Or do you stand in the middle, hope that he hits it well, but not into the corner? So, like, the difference between hurling penalties when I used to take them to now is that its placement is nearly more important than power. That ball can go into the side netting, like, unless a goalie is an incredible dive, you're not getting there. So I found that if I was coming up against a Hoggy, a Joe Canning, or a TJ Reid or someone like that, like, it was guess for me. Like, you know, I had to kind of lean away, you know, to get there, because they had the mixture of accuracy and power. Now, if you're playing against someone that maybe mightn't have the same power of strike, you could stand in the middle and hope that your dive would get you there, you know? So it just really depends. Like, but for the elite striker that had power on top of accuracy, for me, it was, you had to be hoping you'd lean somewhere to get to it, or else they just hit a bad penalty. Because you even see with TJ Reid's one yesterday, like, the second one, it didn't go as far into the corner, but it's just his power. Like, it's just, like, low to keep it that, like, I always struggled with penalties to keep them low, because you were striking down on the ball and it was taking power off. But TJ Reid seems to be able to do that and keep the ball off the ground travelling. So for me, it just depended on the striker, whether you were going to go early and hope or stand in the middle. Like, you know, so, like, it's a tricky one. But, like, the thing about TJ Reid and, like, the Tony Kellys, the Joe Cannings, the Hoggies and all these guys, they can put it both sides. You know, it's not that you're standing in the middle going, oh, this guy likes going here all the time, I'm going to step that way. Like, I see Tony Kelly putting in top corner from different angles. I see TJ Reid the same, like, you know. So it's a very difficult thing for a goalkeeper. And I know people say they're outside the 21, but it's still, it's an incredible strike, like, from those fellas. And it just showed yesterday. But I'd love to have seen, I hope there is another footage of the first one, just to see how good the save was.
Yeah, it might emerge maybe an angle behind TJ Reid looking straight forward would be ideal. So in terms of this game then, just to summarise, I mean, how much of this do you think is down to the memories of February and the All-Ireland final defeat for Ballyhale and getting sort of revenge, to put it another one way, on Ballygunner, and how much of this was just down to the sheer talent of these sides?
Soccer, rugby, tennis, if you have two Goliaths, I suppose, meeting against each other, like, you know, at the pinnacle of the sport, then it's going to go either way. Like, you know, like I kind of fancied Ballygunner because I thought their style of play might have just led to, once it was a dry day, led to kind of, you know, a bit more speed, a bit more guile. But like, you could never write off a Kilkenny team of any grade. Like, you know, they're just immense, honest players. And obviously, like, you've got three of the best forwards in the country on that team then as well. Like, you know, you're obviously throwing in that on top of it. But I thought a lot of bigger players, like, as I referred to earlier, Joey Holden was just, you know, it just seemed that they just were battle hard and they were saying, look, this is it. Like, I thought Richie Reid's placement at times was unbelievable. He read the game very well. Like, you know, look, I'd be kind of critical enough of his clearances sometimes because he is a goalkeeper playing centre back at times, which I love as well, the standing left handed strike. Like, but he thought he was excellent. I thought he was brilliant. And then, I can refer to this. Will Colin Fennelly go back in with Kilkenny? Like, you know, it's like Stephen O'Keefe, will he go back in with Waterford? Both of them are more than capable of playing for intercounty teams. But like, you had a massive focal point there when he ran at the team as well. So I actually thought it was just they decided, look, 65, 70 minutes, however long this is going to take, let's give it a go. Both teams, like, we're not talking much about Ballygunner. Like it's not that they were poor, you know. It was just two excellent teams going at it. I don't think, look, it's not the most stylish game of hurling we'll ever see, you know, the sexiest game of hurling, but it was intense. Like, again, you know, it was just ferocious. And, like, you know, you'd love to know what was the secret behind it all. Like, it's not that Ballygunner didn't work hard either. It was just Kilkenny or Kilkenny style hurling from Ballyhale. Every time a Ballygunner fella got it, they just thumped him, hit him, you know. And that was Ballygunner style of hurling, off the shoulder running. But sure, like, off the shoulder running was stopped at impact, at contact, bang, hit, you know, turned them around. And the Ballyhale boys were bigger and stronger, like, you know, like the Mahoney's there are two, and Fitzgerald and all them, like, they're unbelievable hurlers, but they were being met by men and hitting them, you know, hard. And I think that was it for me, really. It was just more the physical nature of Ballyhale that kind of just got him through. But again, look, at like, people might be saying, it was exciting, it was brilliant. It wasn't the 425 to 424 that we all had to hope for, but by God, it was exciting. And I had a bit of everything. Two penalties in 2 minutes, you know, it was like the France goals. Like, you left the room for 1 second, you're after missing two penalties, like, you know. But I just thought performances all over the field from everybody. I thought it was just, it was a great game of hurling, and I think Ballyhale just really, really wanted it. And it's not that Ballygunner didn't. And I know people might be listening in for, oh, in the, like, you know, for the moment of the game. For me, the biggest moment of the game, and we're talking about Stephen O'Keefe saves keeping Ballygunner in it. Like, remember that now, like, Ballyhale, they leave a negative here. They should have scored goals. I'm not on about the shots that Stephen O'Keefe saved, but they should have given that extra pass. Like, three of those occasions, there was an extra body, like Colin Fennelly for two, I think, and I don't know who was the third one. Give the hand pass, then Stephen O'Keefe would, well, not, he wouldn't have no chance because he always has a fucking chance. But like, give the pass and they could have had three or four more goals. We could be sitting here talking about Ballyhale scoring 320 something, you know. But it was just, they just took the wrong decision at the wrong time, you know, which isn't like teams like that. Like, they're very selfless, you know, they'll give the ball at the right time. So I thought Ballyhale's performance, while it was physical, I thought they actually created some unbelievable opportunities against an excellent defence in Ballygunner. So I think they'll be very proud and very pleased at their performance. And just to kind of, for the Dunloy game, make sure if those opportunities do arise, that they do finish them. You know, but they created some great goal scoring opportunities, which, like everyone's applauding Stephen O'Keefe, which it should be done. But like, those hand passes should have been given, you know, on the flip side.
Yeah, and so it's Dunloy that they're going to meet in the All-Ireland hurling final. And this is how the other game was described. Dunloy 114 to 13 points to St. Thomas. It was described in the Examiner by Owen Cormacan as the first half was one of absurd wastefulness. In this year of soaring energy costs, St. Thomas and Dunloy in particular had headed out for the day with the immersion on and every light in the house left on as well. So I think that's the best way you could possibly describe a game with as many wides as we had in the first half.
Yeah, I think both teams would be kicking themselves. They obviously don't lie or delight it, they're true, like, but that's a very good description. I wouldn't have been able to come up with that now. Yeah, like, sure, like, I think I kind of seeing that was at about 2-7, 2-6 that they could have, you know, done, like, could have gone in a half time more with if they were, but sure, you're always like, look, I'm a golfer and I always, you come in after the round saying, coulda, shoulda, woulda, you know. But I think St. Thomas is obviously kicking themselves more the fact that they're out, that they could have just maybe pushed on. And like, it took until I think the last part of the second half for them to show, you know, the real style of hurling. But like, flipping that over again, like, you know, I always ask the question, this is that because St. Thomas's didn't or just weren't allowed as well, you know, on bits and pieces, like, as well. But what a shot in the arm for Ulster hurling, like, you know, I think is that the last, I think they've been the final 5 times, and the last 3 times it's been Galway opposition they've beaten to get there. I was asked on the show, like, what did I think? And I, like, my thing, and I'm going to stick with it, like, is that Antrim hurling is as good as any county. Skill wise, like, physical nature, it's the speed of the game that needs to just come up that notch. And again, okay, my main reason for that is just, like, I put it down, people might disagree, and more than happy to argue it out, is the geographical area that they're in, that, like, they have to struggle to get matches at a higher level because they have to travel and teams aren't willing to travel up there, like, you know. So it's the exposure to the high speed game that we are fortunate enough, you know, in Munster, that we can just travel over any border to play against the club team of a higher grade or of a similar grade, you know. So, but like, I hope this really does give, like, you spoke there about Ballyhale. I've said this in the show before, where I went to Cushendall in 13, like, and you're on about a shock to the system. Like, I got a shock to the system when I saw what the Glens of Antrim had to offer with hurling. Like, Jesus Christ, it was just like a religion. Like, it was incredible. It was one of my most pleasurable weekends to experience what hurling meant to people. Like, you know, like, we love hurling. I love hurling. No point saying that, like, but they love hurling, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And to see them turning up to Nala in a final where, look, they're going to be given no chance whatsoever. But it, like, it's just, it must be fantastic to be up there today. I'd say the Monday club up there now is fairly hot and heavy, like, you know, and well deserved too. Like, and like, we'll go on to it now in a while, like, about the game itself, but Jesus Christ, like, some of those hurlers, I said it, like, if you, like, I love looking at the style of a hurler, how he holds the hurley, how he strikes the ball, how he catches the ball. Like, those don't lie, lads, look like any inter-county player that you'd see, you know. And I mean this, and this isn't, like, I said this, like, I was asked, like, could I see a shock? And I said, look, there's always a chance, you know, there's always a chance, like, you know. But I just felt that the speed of the Galway hurling from St. Thomas's, especially with the year that Galway had, you know, and with the sprinkling of those players being in with Shefflin, I thought it would have pushed through. So I put my hands and say I got it wrong. But it was just an unbelievable, some of the scores were just incredible. And as I said, I'd love to see a few videos of the Monday club up there.
When a shock like this happens in the All-Ireland semi-final, like, it's very hard not to give as much credit as you possibly can to Dunloy for, you know, making the shock happen in the first place. And I mean, this could have been much more clear cut in terms of Dunloy. They had 9 wides in the first half. They could have absolutely destroyed St. Thomas here because they just didn't show up. Is it a case of sort of maybe complacency with the St. Thomas lads, that they thought that maybe, you know, coming up against a side from Antrim, that they might not need to get out of third gear? Or do you think it's nerves, or what do you think played into the St. Thomas performance?
Like, I don't know what goes on in St. Thomas' dressing room, but at that level, you're not in a semi-final. You have your homework done in the opposition, like, you know what I mean? You've known, but, like, you'd have gotten feedback whether how good or how bad. Like, there's no way they went into that game with their eyes closed or blinkers on. Like, they knew that they were going to come for a team. And all they had to do is look at the history of Dunloy making these finals anyway, you know what I mean? That there's always a chance of that. But then sometimes it does creep in and you kind of say to yourself, yeah, look, they're good, but they can't be this good, like. And you're in a battle before you know where you are. And you are just, and you know what happens? It's not that you don't try. It's the small things go wrong and they fester in your head. Like, you know, David Burke took a shot there at one stage from his own 65 and it went wide. Like, and, you know, I think he won the next puck out. Like, but, you know, like, those things would either go over the bar or on another day he'd give a good delivery in. And I thought, like, for a while that if they had placed Connor Cooney at the edge of the square and tried to give him a bit more space because, you know, to get him into the game, might have made a change. So, like, there was a lot of things I thought would have maybe changed things up, like losing Darragh Burke wasn't it before the game then as well. Like, you know, there was a lot of things probably went their way, but, like, you cannot take anything away from Dunloy here. It was, again, a very workmanlike performances in off the ball with incredible skill on it, like, you know. Some unbelievable scores from the sideline. The goal, which we'll talk about in a second, was just different class altogether. And like, you know, was thing. And as you said, like, they missed a penalty in the first half. They could have gone in the half time well in the lead. you know. But I just think St. Thomas will be very disappointed. Like, you know, when you look, like, it's no point saying others. Put those two teams down on paper. You can't give Dunloy, you know, I think it was a 4-1. Did someone say that? Maybe I was wrong. No, I don't know. I see that something it was that wide of a gap from the from the bookmakers, like, and stuff like. So you couldn't put the two teams down on paper and see what Galway have done and what these players from Galway and St. Thomas have done, and given Dunloy, you know, a close chance, but just on the day. You know, you can't say everything went right for Dunloy either because of the wides, but a lot of things went right for them. But they made it happen. They made it happen. They went and did it. And just things started to fester away at St. Thomas's, and the pressure came on a bit more, and things started to go wrong, and wides upon wides that you wouldn't associate with those players that happened. But I felt that I kind of thought the placement of Conor Cooney maybe could have been like at the edge of the square just for a little bit longer, just to kind of try and isolate him inside there and create the headache of having an inter-county start full forward. But look, as I said, like, we'll go on to the Dunloy performance here in a second, like, and kudos to them.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, when you're coming up against a side that you're not saying they're a bad side, but you probably don't take them as seriously as you would a Ballyhale game, and then suddenly you're four or five points behind, you're going to take a touch and somebody's right on top of you, and it's almost like, fuck me, we're actually in a game here, and suddenly you're on your heels, and then it's just really tough to get off your heels then.
Was it Mike Tyson said it, like, everyone has a tactic or a strategy until you get punched in the face, like, you know, yeah. Like, they probably had their homework done, this is what they're supposed to do, next thing they go out and, like, you know, we've all been there, like, you know, we could be playing a game of soccer in the yard at school, like, and, you know, you're playing against a lesser young fella who's just pissing you off, like, he's in your face, or he's annoying you. Like, I remember I went back 1 year playing junior B football, the lads asked me to go back, like, because I wasn't playing football for the first team at Kentor, and this young fella came on me, and he just wouldn't stop annoying me, like, you know, because I used to be okay at football, basically, but, like, I thought I was going out here to swan around, like, and kick a few points, but he just wouldn't leave me alone, like, you know what I mean, it pissed me off, and it was just the most annoying game, like, you know, but, like, that's, you know, you've done lie doing that on top of having serious talent sprinkled around the field, you know, so, like, they showed that, like, look, again, that experience of Cushing Dahl has really made, you know, an affection to me about Antrim hurling, and to see what the team have done, like, in the league, and, you know, catching Clare and stuff like that has been great, like, but, like, the passion, it was just shown out yesterday, like, you know, just shown out through their performance, that it meant a lot to them, and again, like, you know, it's not that St. Thomas's didn't, but just Dunloy just really went for it, like, and what I really liked about it, they threw off the shackles as well, you know what I mean, like, they really said, look, let's give it a go, let's see where we are, and I know they'll do the same in the final. The funny thing is, I think the Ballyhale system will actually suit them more than the Ballygunner one. No, people might think I'm crazy here, but, like, Ballyhale and Dunloy will stand and fight man for man against each other, you know what I mean? And it'll just come down to the better quality, I believe, in the Ballyhale team. But I think it won't be as a bad game as people might predict.
Yeah, and Dunloy have some seriously stylish hurlers in their setup as well. And I think that was it was really shown in that Killian Molloy goal. It's probably one of the best goals that's been scored at this level.
Yeah, like the catch from Nigeria and the hand, like, all these skills are underrated. Like, you know, as I said to you, every Antrim hurler has it. There's no doubting about that. Like, Neil McManus is, I suppose, the flagship of Antrim hurling, show how good they are, like, up there and everything like that. But, like, they are extremely skillful up there. And the catch, the hand pass, and the way. But, like, what I loved about it was how close he held the hurley. He held the hurley halfway down the grip. So, like, anybody that was going to have to come in and swipe across him was either going to have to foul him. But he held it so close, and he also finished with the hand halfway down the grip. So if you watch it from close in, like, he didn't lengthen the hurley to give anyone a chance. He soloed the length, however far he ran, 30 yards with the hurley, and up he went and crashed it into the top corner. So it was actually the knowledge to take the ball in the hand at the right time, throw it off it, and in mind it with a shorter hurley, and finish it with that length of the hurley was just different gravy. It was class. And actually, the funny thing for me, I picked out another score in the game. It was Rainelli. So I don't know if you remember when, I think it was Dara Burke came into the edge of the square, and he got a yellow card for pushing over. He shoved the hurley into the fullback's face. The next puck out, he shimmies to go to the left for the puck out, and at the last second, he breaks his stride and strikes it down the right wing. And I think it went to Shane Elliott, and he swung it over the bar from the right hand side. If anyone that's really interested in that can watch that back, it was a huge moment in the game because it was a lull in the game, and it really just kicked him on and gave him that stride again. But it was a very intelligent puck out because he dummied that he was going on the left wing, and at the very last second, he broke his stride, and it was oceans of space. The ball bounced into space, and on he came and put it over. So, like, there was a lot of good scores in the game, like, you know, like, everyone's talking about the goal, and correctly so. And I don't know if TJ Cahir done their goal of the seasons yet, like, but this should be goal Z anyway in the voting. because it was just, as I said, it was the way he held the hurley, the way he ran, the timing of taking it to the hand so the players couldn't get it off him, and the finish was top class. But to have, come here, to have the balls to go for it. Yeah. Could have tapped it over. Do you know what I mean? Could have tapped it over. He'd no support. He had to do it all by himself. And it just, I thought to me, that epitomised the free spirit of Dunloy. And I don't know, was that something that Gregor Kane had given him? I don't know, was it something that he said, look, lads, here we go. You know, tactically, this is what we're doing. But go and do it. Because that goal looked to me as if, like, let's just give this a go and let's see where it takes us. And look, I don't think it'll be, I don't think it'll be too dissimilar attitude in the final either. No, they're probably obviously coming up against, you know, a different beast.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to that final, we're talking about sides. When you get to a semi-final, it not so much a coin toss as it is the team that performs better. But the teams are all fairly similar level, and we come away from this weekend with, you know, the Stephen O'Keefe save, the TJ Reid second penalty, and you're talking about that point now as well, and the goal. How much of these games come down to moments like that? It's where it's just moments in the game of pure quality that swing momentum either way.
Any sports psychologist that comes in and talks to teams nowadays talks about moments. It's moments. It's not the game. We broke down a game 1 year against Kilkenny in the league. We lost by, we lose by 3 or 4 points at the end. And we broke it down that we actually lost 12 minutes of the game massively. You know what I mean? Like, and they came down into moments. And people listening, you know, there might be one or two fellas sitting down having their dinner or whatever, like that, puking at the thought of this. Like, but like, it's not a 70-minute game. It's not. It's actually like one moment can kind of create a purple patch for a team to go and kick on, you know, and it can stop a purple patch from the opposition. And that's why I picked that puck out. I just thought it was a very intelligent play, whether it was something they'd thought up or whatever, but it just gave them that little bit of, like, for a team like Dunloy, who are the underdogs, you need every little bit of confidence you can get. And that's what I thought when the penalty was saved. I was like, oh, right, okay, is this it? No, another chance gone. But like little moments like that, and then a sprinkling of just absolute brilliance of the goal is what you need with it. But those little moments, they create your head, like they create that moment of like, do you know what? We can actually do this. You know, we spoke with Istanbul, we're here, you know, and let's push on. And it gives that other bit of energy. So I couldn't agree more with you that it's like, look, we're talking about Stephen O'Keefe's performance, even though he lost. But if one of those goals had gone in early, you know, that would have kicked Ballyhale on more. And that's why I spoke about the Dean Mason save. While it mightn't have been as good as Stephen O'Keefe's penalty save, how important that was, especially for Ballygunner to get a goal from Desi Hutchinson. Like, they'd have taken a goal from their kit man, don't get me wrong. But to get a goal from Desi Hutchinson at that time, and I thought that's why the save bouncing in front of him opposite side. So for me, that would, like, if you had to pick one moment of both games for me, which would be obviously up for debate, that save from him and the point from Elliot in the wing, I just thought the two of them kind of steadied ships of both teams, on top of like individual performances that we've discussed already. Mm-hmm. But 100%. And like, you could rewind the World Cup final. You're talking about the save at the end of the game. Like that one moment in the 93rd minute, we wouldn't be talking about penalties. You know, that's the back of the net. And you know, they're all, it's broken down to individual plays. And that's why, if you look at any intercounty team, they're just being encouraged to work like dogs. You don't know what a hook would do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So the final is set for the 21st of January. That's a good while away. And I mean, we're talking about a final that happened just back in February, and now we're already here now going for an All-Ireland final. I guess the purpose of the split season is to have the entire season finished by the end of the year. We're not there, and now we have lads who are ordinary people. It's not just inter-county players. We have ordinary lads who pretty much have to give up their Christmas, because the 21st of January is just a really awkward date for this final.
Yeah, like I think it's something, again, that has to be promised and kept. No, I think the All-Ireland final has been brought back earlier next year, isn't it? Or is it later? My apologies, I'm not sure. No, but like for the inter-county season, but it's something that has to be, like, they promised that it was going to be within the one season. Keep it that way, like, you know. I'm sure both Ballyhale and Dunloy lads won't mind, you know, curtailing a night or two for it. The club player itself, you know, it won't be actually as bad, because when they're finished, the All-Ireland final, like, Christmas is given up, but they'll go on the absolute batter for the month of January after that. Like, you know, the inter-county player that has to put his boots back on and go again, which I admire. Like, I spoke about TJ Reid there before, that it's not his physical physique that I'd be more, amazed by. It's his head. Jesus Christ, like, he's going to be going for potentially 3 seasons in 2 in a row, you know. It's mad, like, that you've got an All-Ireland final last February, an All-Ireland final in January, an All-Ireland final for East County in this year as well. So you'll have three All-Ireland finals played within the space of 12 months. Like, you know, that's incredible. Like, Jesus Christ, that's you know, I don't know, has it ever been done before? But it's just the thought of going again for them, I think, would be difficult. But I'd hope to Jay. Look, in fairness to Jay, look, I think they're doing their best and they really are trying to get this right. Like, I think as an advocate for the split season, the reason I'm an advocate for the split season is the players are happy. Yeah. As a spectator, look, we'll take what we get. You know what I mean? I'm a spectator now, that's what I am. And whatever the players want, they should be given, because now you look at the sacrifices, as you said there, like these two clubs, they have to give up the Christmas period, which I'm sure if they were offered a starter, they'd have no problem doing. I'm not saying that. But if they were able to play the final yesterday, you know, if the final was done, yes, imagine the celebrations over Christmas or the time, you know what I mean? So that'd be the dream scenario. But you cannot give out about the GA and about anything at the moment, because like we're sat here and just getting my dates right there, whatever we are, the 19th of December, and we're talking about two All-Ireland semi-finals that brought huge interest and huge intrigue. And as soon as this next pod, the next time we talk about a pod could be talking about an inter-county match.
Yeah.
Back out of the flip side of Christmas, you're back in January and you're talking about you know, the provincial competitions there to start of January, like, and it's just mad, like, you know, it's great. It's you know, I understand why people are against the split season and blah blah blah, but like, we're talking about club hurling. This is great. Isn't this what we wanted? You know, we're after watching everyone in the country sat down yesterday to watch two All-Ireland finals. And we'll be talking then after January about an All-Ireland hurling club final on top of Waterford playing Tipperary in the whatever cup it's called at the moment, this co-op storage, you know. So it's great. I think it's been a success so far with obviously open to improvements. But I think the GA and in fairness, they're willing to make that change. But yeah, as I said, the two clubs come here. I know those Kilkenny lads anyway. They'll be having a fair sup of beer over the winter, don't you worry. And I mentioned Monday club there. I think it's going to be Monday club and Tuesday club and even Thursday club in the college, I should say, as well. So there'll be no fear of them having a few pints.
Well, just to finish, before we get your prediction for the final, because I don't think we'll have a pod before that, how do you stay fit now over the course of this season? Because I think anybody who's ever played GAA, if you take 3 weeks off between championship and even if you're still playing league football, by the time you get to championship, you're still not fit enough to be playing championship hurling. So do they, you know, give them a week or two off now over Christmas and then have a second or third pre-season now for the week and a half or so?
I don't know, obviously, Jesus, like, you'd never know. But I'd imagine the players will be given the week off. I'd say, like, you have to understand now as well, like, a lot of these guys will be playing Fitzgibbon hurling as well. Actually, was the other thing I meant to say, as soon as this is over as well. Like, but like, you have, was it 4 weeks to the final? So we talking about bones of 4 weeks, something like that. So a month run, into the championship, okay, to the final. So I'd imagine they'll have this week off. I'd say straight after December, they'll be on to either their county panels, who'll be back training, or colleges for a challenge match. I could imagine, I might be wrong here, no one saying that, to get the rust out of the system after Christmas again. But I'd say this week off, they'll train a bit harder for the first week. 2 weeks leading into the championship, they might get a match. So maybe soon after Christmas, when counties are going back in and doing stuff like that, they might play a bit of a game, and then it's wind down in again, like, because you're preparing for one match in a month. So I'd say, like, it's like any team that have played a kind of a Munster final or a Leinster final, have had 3 weeks off or something like that. A couple of days off, enjoy the beer, relax, switch off. But the thought of training on St. Stephen's Day, no, oh sweet Jesus, and the hail and the snow baiting down on top of you, I don't think it'd be something that'd be enjoyable. But what I would gather what teams normally do is that they'll have a 3.5 week run in where first couple of nights back will be sweat the shit out of the system, you know, do your bit of running, do your bit of a slog, you know, while maintaining or hurling, because like, it's still an All-Ireland final after a long year. And I'd imagine that both teams would probably look for one challenge match. I know that's depending on whether they're risking injuries or not, but I'd be amazed if both teams go a month without playing a challenge and playing an All-Ireland final. So I wouldn't be surprised if you hear the murmurings of a county team or a college team playing against them over the Christmas period to get them ready in. And in 2 weeks out, then you're just preparing like you normally would. You go into training, do your drills, get stuff done and tactical stuff, whatever like that. But it's great. It's good headache to have.
Yeah, look, and as much as, you know, people give out about it and people are concerned about the players' welfare and things like that. I think anybody who's been involved in some sort of campaign where they're going well, it's a really enjoyable experience to be the only ones training, the only ones still going, the only ones, you know, you're all in this together, sort of a galvanizing thing for a team. It's an incredibly enjoyable experience as well.
It also brings a different special feeling around Christmas to their parishes. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone's going to be buzzing, exciting. Sure, the pubs are going to be hopping for all the spectators talking about it. Like, what a great experience. You know, those lads will be like, look, they'll be allowed to have a few pints over Christmas. It's not like, you know, they're not going to be on a drinking ban like St. Stephen's night and stuff. They'll curtail it to start of January. Like, you still have 3 weeks. Do you know what I mean? Like that, like, it's not as if they're going to miss out on Christmas completely. Like, and they might end up even doing something themselves as a team on a night out, you know, in their towns and villages and wherever. So what a great buzz they'll have. And you know what? It's maintenance, I suppose. The other thing you have to look at in as well, a lot of those guys, the likes of TJ Reid there, as I said, you like, is going, Jesus Christ, 36 months nearly in a row, like, you know, on top of like Owen Cody and Adrian Mullen, like Adrian Mullen, like Owen Cody, like we played against, we Dara Corcoran with us, like, and like we played Fitzgibbon the week after they lost the final, like, you know what I mean? Like, so like they've played in 5 or 6 different competitions, but Christmas will be great around those places as well, because it'll be such a buzz and excitement. So I'm sure those lads will enjoy every bit of it as well.
Yeah. So just really quickly before we finish up, call the All-Ireland Hurling Club final.
Yeah, look, I don't think anyone's going to be too surprised when I think that what Ballyhale have done in the history, that they won't want to feel the experience of last February again. It won't be Ballygunner facing them to motivate them, but it'll be an All-Ireland final in Croke Park again. I just think that they do have that little bit of experience that will get them over the line on top of it. But as I said to you earlier, I feel that Dunloy will, if they can just hold them early and keep in the game, their skill and their physicality as well will match up well to Ballyhale. But I do think that Ballyhale will have, they're just too good. I just think they're an amazing club team, and however many plaudits and kudos have been given out and have to be doubled and trebled for what they've done as a team. Incredible bunch of players, incredible parish. So yeah, it'll be Ballygunner for me. And even if it does happen, fair play to Dunloy. Like, you know, they've brought a huge shot in the arm to Ulster hurling again, just to show that, you know what, they're not that far off.
Yeah. We will be covering that game in 4 or 5 weeks time, hopefully, on this podcast. So until then, Anthony, have a good Christmas. Thanks very much for everything this year, and we'll chat to you in the new year.
Super. Thanks, Minnie.